Recently, we explored the question, what if Chaos were able to achieve galactic domination? People were quite taken with this concept, and it is certainly interesting to consider what the different scenarios would look like for a faction to dominate all others in a galaxy as complex and multifaceted as that of Warhammer 40,000. Chaos, of course, have a whole spectrum of outcomes dependent on who would ultimately retain control, and we discussed the impact this could have on the gods of the warp themselves. If you missed this last time, see the link on screen for that video right now. Speaking of gods, if you want to help me in appeasing my lord and master Algo, god of the YouTube algorithm, please remember if you enjoy the video, drop a like, tell me your thoughts in the comments, and consider to share the video. It all helps to contribute, and I greatly appreciate everybody's support as always. If you don't want to miss the videos, as I only put out a couple a month, be sure to click the notification bell. So much like Chaos today, we will consider an equally disturbing scenario for humanity: the prospect of a Tyranid victory across all, or at least the vast majority of the galaxy. If this is reasonably possible, and if so, what would it look like? The Tyranids are relentless. They are the ultimate destroyer, the devourer of all life. While the broader galaxy's wars may ebb and flow, the relentless onslaught of the Great Devourer leaves no respite for those unfortunate enough to cross its path. For the Tyranids do not fight for principles or a complex ideological agenda. They do not seek territory or permanence. They only seek to devour and consume all in their path, leaving behind barren husks that are, for all intents and purposes, permanently dead worlds. Realistically, of course, the prospect for any faction to achieve true galactic domination would be a feat on the brink of the impossible. But for the Tyranids, their threat is not one merely of brute force, but a very existential peril that defies the traditional calculations of power, especially when one sees the approaching relentless and overwhelming tides of the Great Devourer. From the perspective of humanity, the Tau, Votan, the Eldari, the Tyranids are a nightmarish threat that knows no equal. It matters not whether they achieve 85%, 90%, or 99.9% control of the galaxy. Their arrival heralds the same outcome, a galactic catastrophe of unimaginable proportions. Whilst the sheer scale of the galaxy, with its thousands of star systems and millions of habitable worlds, may in some respects allow some to consider themselves safe, in reality, it only magnifies the Tyranid threat. Their ability to adapt to faction-specific defences makes them a logistical nightmare for any civilization attempting to withstand their onslaught. Some worlds of the Mechanicus, for example, thought that they had seen it all and would be able to withstand the tides of the Tyranid, but were left deeply humbled as a result. M41 is not the time where humanity made its most significant territorial gains either, and the Tyranids are an ever more formidable force. Their presence has shifted the balance of power in the galaxy at a fundamental level, and as humanity's grip steadily weakens, other races become additionally emboldened or continue to rise in power themselves. And the Xenos annihilation of Imperial planets only threatens to permanently relegate humanity to becoming a mere footnote in galactic history. For humanity has not stood for any length of time comparable to, say, the Necron or the Eldari. For most of those who would seek to achieve it, galactic dominion entails more than just vanquishing enemies. It necessitates the ability to govern, manage resources, and control populations across an immense territory. The logistical challenges of communication, supply lines, and enforcing authority in such a sprawling empire are staggering, as the failings of the Imperium prove on a day-to-day basis. Of course, for the Tyranids, they do not share these concerns, much to their significant advantage. They're not burdened with the need for stability or governance. They do not need to ever worry about defending worlds or reinforcing those damaged by conflict, for they're only ever on the attack. They are only focused upon the relentless pursuit of their cosmic hunger. And in a galaxy filled with shifting alliances, political machinations, and internal power struggles, the Tyranids stand apart. They are a force of nature, an alien cataclysm that shares no concern for the complexities of politics or diplomacy. They simply threaten to devour everything in their path. In terms of galactic domination, the Tyranids pose a unique challenge and threat in the galaxy of M41, for their motivations, strengths, and weaknesses defy the conventional norms of power and dominance. Their focus is unbreakable, their adaptability boundless, and their presence often a very literal shadow which hangs over the worlds of sentient races. In the coming centuries, it may well be that the Tyranids become the greatest threat of all, one that, whether they like it or not, all factions may need to unite against in a coordinated defensive strategy, or alternatively face the prospect of being consumed and turned into liquid nourishment by the unrelenting hunger of the great devourer. So the question, is a Tyranid galactic domination achievable? At a very straightforward level, the answer is surely yes, except there are obviously a considerable variety of factors in answering that question. And one of the first things we can think about is that when we previously discussed chaos, at the core of unpacking that scenario was the fractured complexity of what amounts to chaos as a force, which would then bring us to the conclusion that unless they were able to find some way to collectively unite, their chances of total galactic domination were an outside chance at best, despite their inherent and quite present power. This was not to say, of course, that they could not still inflict major damage or even to control a significant area of the known galaxy. The region of the Dark Imperium remains a real threat of becoming lost to not just Chaos, but various Xenos as well. But total galactic domination, without the forces of Chaos working together, it's quite a stretch. There exists, though, within the Tyranids, other issues that go both in their favour and against them. For one thing, unlike Chaos, the Tyranids are a considerably more severe existential threat to many other factions, even the Necron in some respects. And while Chaos are undoubtedly a huge concern for the Imperium and the Eldar, they're less of a concern for, say, the Tau and Necron. I say less, still a concern, but Chaos are not so hyper-focused upon them at this point. The Tyranids are very obviously quite different. They exist as almost the polar opposite when it comes to presenting a united force. They are very singularly minded, not to mention their almost incomprehensible weight of numbers. It's been suggested that the current tendrils of the Tyranids only represent a percentage of their total number that continues to pour into the galaxy. So it brings up this issue of, at what point could we potentially see some united front against what is arguably the greatest threat facing the entire galaxy? But humanity has so far generally dealt with the Tyranids just as and when, which is really perhaps not the smartest approach, but then again, they also struggled with even the concept of how the Tyranids function at a basic level for the longest time. Initial observations and encounters were often interpreted incorrectly, and so it has been challenging for those among the Imperium to understand the nature and drive of this extremely hostile species, which obviously then has the knock-on effect of dealing with them ineffectually. Human observers initially saw the Tyranids as little more than ravenous, hungry beasts, not unlike the many creatures and Xenos they'd encountered throughout the galaxy already on Death Worlds, something that could just be purged, cauterized from the Imperial Galactic domain, and the problem would be solved. This, of course, was not the case, and even when applied at a massively destructive scale, Krippman and his campaign of Exterminatus, it would still be an approach which proved only moderately effective in slowing the Tyranids. Over time, humanity steadily came to understand that the Tyranids do not operate as individual creatures, but as a collective, the hive mind. Using this shared collective mentality gives the Tyranids an amazing strategic advantage in that they can gather information and focus their forces with an almost unique efficiency. They also do not suffer from any of the morale issues generally associated with mortal creatures: pain, fear, terror, shock, and just generally broken morale. The only means discovered that has been found to significantly disrupt them is the destruction of these so-called synapse creatures. The Tyranids use certain individual bioforms as effectively a psychic pylon, which carries the power of the hive mind across the individual organisms that constitute a Tyranid fleet. In cases where synapse creatures have been destroyed, this can bring a level of confusion and indecision among lower Tyranid forms, and even see them turn on one another. On planets where lone Tyranid forms have been stranded for whatever reason, they do not seem to seek any higher goal than basic instinctive survival, much like any other creature. So the destruction of synapse creatures has become a priority when engaging Tyranid forces in battle, because the resulting disruption can be enough to turn the tide. But to understand this is only one part of the fight against the Tyranid menace. Now, I won't cover the entire process of a Tyranid planetary corruption in extended detail today, as I've covered this before. The brief overview, though, is that they use their immense psychic powers to first blanket a world, and indeed the warp around this or related to a world, in a shroud of communication disruption known as the Shadow in the Warp. This prevents and isolates a world from reinforcements, escape, or in warning others. After this, the planet will be seeded by alien forms from the sky, or continual drops containing larger, more aggressive forms in these synapse creatures. Finally, at the outbreak of conflict, the Vanguard infiltration forms, in addition to potentially cults of the Tyranids that have remained hidden within a society until that critical moment, will appear to disrupt defences and leadership. Once the battle is eventually over and the planet is lost, the Tyranids will spend significant time consuming all biological matter on the planet, including water and minerals. They will create vast biopores that Tyranid forms which have finished to serve their function will just willingly throw themselves into this corrosive liquid to be dissolved and then reabsorbed into the raw material of the High Fleet biomass sucked up into the bioships by their immense capillary towers. Once the planet is completely dead, the High Fleet moves on to the next world, having secured a significant net positive in the acquisition of biomass that enables its long-term survival in the cold void of space between worlds and even galaxies. For the Tyranids, though, achieving galactic dominion still entails much more than pure military strength. For while it is a devouring maw that threatens to strip the galaxy of its very essence, vast biofleets descending upon worlds like a plague, the hive mind ensuring that the acquisition of all organic matter and even some minerals from the geological strata is completed as efficiently as possible. The challenges faced by the Tyranid, though, are many, which is why their hive fleet tendrils have so far been seen to display specifically different behaviours and traits. This is, of course, though, the ultimate danger, but in some respects the greatest weakness of the Tyranids, in that they often can be resisted, providing their specific biological adaptations do not align with those that they are attempting to consume. Hive Fleet Kraken, for example, leans more on creatures who engage in close combat, so if they were to face a powerful longer-range enemy such as the Tau, this could lead them to defeat, unable to counter this. On the other hand, if they were caught off guard, it could equally doom a Tau world if the Tyranids were able to engage with enough strength and speed that they could overwhelm them before they could set up sufficient defences. Still, it's not the be-all and end-all, because for example, High Fleet Gorgon engaged the Tau, and this was a High Fleet that were focused on fast genetic adaptability and strategy, even unusually fast for the Tyranids. So this seemed a deadly challenge for the Tau, but in the end they were still able to best the Tyranid, albeit with assistance from the Imperial Militarum, and we'll talk a little about that later. So it's far from certain how well specific Tyranid fleet adaptations will perform. The only thing that can be said is that obviously one which has traits that specifically counter an enemy should, at least on paper, give them a significant advantage. With this in mind, one of the Tyranids' greatest challenges lies in determining the form their domination would take, because of this fact that each High Fleet possesses unique strengths and weaknesses. High Fleet Leviathan is known for its ability to adapt rapidly, yet relies heavily on synapse creatures and is susceptible to psychic attacks. High Fleet Kraken, as noted, excels in speed and again adaptability, using rapid reinforcement capabilities and an emphasis on close combat to deluge an enemy. But this can leave it vulnerable to longer range firepower and well-prepared bastion worlds, conversely. High Fleet Behemoth specialises in brute force and a notable preference for bioplasma attacks, including horrific shock and awe tactics that are emotionally devastating for an enemy and maintaining their morale. But its step-by-step direct assault approach can be trudging and predictable, meaning it can struggle against both ranged opponents and those with the speed and strategy to outmaneuver them or otherwise just get creative. One of the Tyranid traits which also has a significant impact on their success is their adaptability. And this is something many of their high fleets and smaller fragment forces use to eventually best an enemy. For while they are the apex predators of the galaxy, they do not remain stationary to the challenges posed by an enemy in their evolutionary state. This was another lesson that had to be learned painfully by the Imperium, that their threat lay not only in their overwhelming numbers and extreme ferocity, but in their ability to adapt to changing environments, defensive quirks, and countering whatever is thrown at them through this process of evolving extremely quickly. In some instances, it's been estimated that Tyranids can make genetic evolutions that should take millions of years through the course of a single campaign. They will absorb the genetic material of their prey into their ever-changing genome, becoming more formidable with each conquest. In fact, some of their infiltration organisms are specifically designed to consume their enemy and even, in quite B-movie fashion, suck out their brains to gain their knowledge, so that when the fleet arrives they can pass this knowledge to the Norn Queen, who will adapt and produce bioforms capable of dealing with the specific issues faced by a world, meaning theoretically no defence can withstand their smothering, relentless assault, and often to the shock and horror of planetary defences, these beasts have considerable knowledge about how to avoid their best laid plans, something which can in itself have an extremely disconcerting effect and undermine whatever morale and coherent focus a planet's defenders had left.
Hello? Test? A test? I submit this record in the hope it may be of some help to someone who is more senior, more experienced in such matters than I. May the Emperor guide this data to those who can make use of it. I pray never should a world suffer again, as we have. My mother was an administrator. I regret I fear to disclose her identity. She gave me this recorder and told me if I survived to preserve the memory of what took place upon our world. It was the jewel of our system, and we were blessed to have been able to call it home. I can still see its distant lush forests, the ocean shores which gleamed like sapphire under our twin suns. Then they came. The monsters. Mother said our communications were interrupted months before their arrival. But when they finally came, we were smothered by endless night. The skies fell dark with the silhouettes of their ships. My family, as well, thrown into utter madness that followed. Credits were worthless, not even jewels. The men were all drafted in days. When we entered the underground hangars, this was the last time I saw my father and brother. Evacuation efforts were chaotic, to say the least. Tens of thousands crushed into the spaceport, each person desperate to secure a spot on the few remaining ships. I have never seen fear like I saw in the eyes of those around me. Ever more hysterical screams of the terrified masses were drowned by the howls of the approaching monsters.
Unfortunately, the galaxy of M41 has never looked more ripe for consumption by the Tyranids. With the Despoilers' rampage against humanity continuing and the Imperium's frantic efforts to handle this, whilst also seeking some way to quell the Great Rift's havoc reaching a desperate crossroads, the pressure is only made worse by the ever-increasing possibility of the Imperium losing control of as much as one-third of the galaxy, and all of this without even considering the other threats the entire Imperium faces on a daily basis. Were the Imperium to lose control of the Dark Imperium, the region of the galaxy cast in the shadow of the Great Rift, this would all but certainly provide a means by which the Tyranids could infiltrate and use as a region for biomass accumulation, a sort of galactic staging area to then unleash a never-before-seen scale of devastation. But nothing is so simple, of course. The great suffering they inflict reverberates back into the warp, further fueling the dark powers, raising very curious possibilities of chaos actually benefiting humanity, as the dark powers reach out to establish control of territory that could stand between the Tyranids and the wider Imperium. Whilst in some respects the relentless onslaught of the Great Devourer makes a galactic deluge seem almost inevitable, amidst the terrifying number of worlds scoured to a husk by them, there are significant events within the galaxy occurring that have seen the return of several of the Emperor's lost sons, Gilliman and the Lion. And while they are only individuals, their leadership and ability to unify the forces of humanity do pose a challenge to the domination of the Tyranids. I also would just leave room for us to consider still Vulcan's mysterious absence, which leaves room for his resurgence. But of course, sadly not Rogal Dorn, as he is dead. So the presence of the Primarchs alone complicates the Xenos quest for domination, adding a layer of uncertainty to their galactic ambitions. Of course, the Imperium is not the entire picture. The Orcs for the longest time have been locked in various struggles, most notably in Octarius. And although they seem to ultimately lose that conflict, were we to see the rise of a new and ultimate war boss for the Orcs, if they themselves were to charge across the galaxy in a sweeping war, the scale of which had not been seen since the near destruction of Terra itself, the prospect of a major Tyranid tendril and an Orc war smashing into one another would at the very least give breathing space for the Imperium. Although it's difficult to imagine how it would be greatly positive in the wider scheme of things, but it would certainly mix up the situation. The Eldar are something of an unknown quantity because of their minimal numbers, similarly the Tau and the Votan. but there are still considerations to make there. It's worth noting also, of course, that while the Great Rift is, at one level, a seemingly catastrophic event for humanity, it's been more recently noted that it might inadvertently empower the Emperor, and so therefore humanity. One of the major factors for the Tyranids' success and the galaxy's destruction depends entirely on how specific Hive fleets engage, and of course which faction they face, as we already noted. So while some fleets could see sweeping success in one galactic region, elsewhere a fleet could struggle beyond initial deployment to a world, with its forces shredded by continual long-range firepower from the ground of a heavily prepared bastion world. Then you have the Tyranids' adaptability, as we spoke about too. This is one way for them to deal with such issues, but often this is spoken about in a very specifically isolated way. What I mean by this is that it's discussed from the perspective of a single Hive fleet dealing with one sector of the galaxy and a specific enemy, which admittedly is often the case. But to really understand the Tyranids, to appreciate them and how they're evolving in a much deeper sense, requires understanding of the larger picture. Humanity, the Imperium, and other Xenos species generally only experience and engage with the Tyranids at this fleet scale. So it's understandable they think of them in those terms, Fleet Leviathan, Fleet Kraken, and so on. The problem with this thinking is that it is, in actuality, little different than those humans who were first to speculate that the Tyranids were all independent creatures, little more than beasts operating on base instincts of survival, consumption, and reproduction. We know this now not to be the case. And we also know that Tyranid Hive fleets do not operate in isolation. They aren't individual entities. They're not splinters of their faction. They remain part of something that is, of course, far, far larger, the Tyranid Hive mind. Now, just how much they coordinate on a wider galactic scale than just the specific named tendrils that pierce through the systems of the Imperium is unknown. But the fact that they do operate as part of a larger whole is certainly true. And we know this because it's described how every thought and action, every spark of life in the Tyranid race is bound and interlinked into a single great organism, stretching over light years of space and controlled by the immortal Hive mind. A billion times a billion Tyranids stand at the rim of the galaxy, each one no more than a single cell in the living body of the Hive mind. Not to mention the fact that there are Eldar who have actually seen into the Tyranid Hive mind. It is definitely a united force across all the Hive tendrils. Now, when you carry that thinking forward again, I've often seen it asked, so do then Tyranids fight amongst themselves? What happens if two Tyranid fleets encounter one another? The answer to that is actually quite variable. If two Tyranid fleets were operating in close proximity, but generally did not get in the way of one another or to impact the worlds that they were securing biomass from, I would imagine that they would leave well enough alone and perhaps regard each other with some level of neutrality, potentially aid. However, it has been documented that when two different Tyranid fleets are deployed to the same world, for whatever reason, they absolutely will fight one another. Not to compete for resources necessarily, but to see which can more successfully dominate the other, to see which one is more powerful. This is where the Tyranids reach a point of so-called convergent evolution. This has only been observed among splinter fleets of Tyranids, which is presumably because the main Tyranid Hive fleets are spread out at such great distances. But eventually, it is plausible you could see the same situation occur between two major Tyranid Hive fleets. There are those ignorant members of the Imperium who would consider this an excellent situation. Tyranids fighting each other, wasting their energy and biomass, this is great. Except, of course, this fails to fundamentally understand the Tyranids as a species. For when they engage in war, nothing is wasted. When Tyranids fight one another, the purpose appears to be in determining which has the stronger component elements, which one is stronger physically, which has faster adaptability, more powerful psychic use, and so on. Do they have some other individual traits also to be the most powerful through whatever they have faced so far? So when eventually a victor is determined, the weaker force is completely slaughtered and will then be reabsorbed into the biomass of the stronger Tyranid fleet. These engagements seem to waste very little for the Tyranids and only benefit them by ensuring they emerge stronger as a whole. In some respects, both fleets are destroyed in this process, as whoever emerges from the conflict will not be the same as when they began, having assimilated all the genetic traits of the weaker force whilst retaining their own, thus creating a new Hive fleet which is more effective and stronger than it was before. Interesting stuff, except now scale this up and imagine it happening at a galactic level. As they penetrate deeper into the galaxy, can they form a coordinated effort or remain a more independent and fractured expedition? Such considerations could be pivotal in determining their success or failure. And either way, any significant hold on territory in the galaxy they can secure would be devastating, as it only ensures they retain the biomass required to push on further, dealing ever more damage to the worlds of humanity. For complete domination, there remains the question about what do the Tyranids do when they achieve this, as unlike many other factions, this in itself would be a unique circumstance that is likely only specifically applicable to the Tyranids. So now, let's delve into some of the obstacles the Tyranids face as they strive to establish a dominating presence across the galaxy, which factions will be easy for them to consume and devour, and which will be considerably more challenging. For obvious reasons, the Imperium, including the Mechanicus, stands as one of the greatest obstacles for the Tyranids, given that the vast empire of humanity spans the entire galaxy and has some of the most powerful forces and most heavily defended worlds. They are also, unfortunately, the greatest source of biomass for the Tyranids and everything they need to grow stronger with every conquest as they steadily progress through the galaxy. A drive toward galactic domination by the Tyranids would continue much as it has already. For although they have suffered many losses, they have certainly had considerable success. They continue to launch relentless assaults on Imperial worlds as new Hive fleet tendrils stretch across the galaxy, striking even at the heart of the Imperium. World after world falls to the ravenous swarms, and as the Imperium becomes weaker with populations being consumed, resources absorbed, the Tyranids only grow stronger, amalgamating all that matter into the ever-growing Tyranid Hive fleets. Things would only become worse for the Imperium as every victory by the Xenos would see it lose key industrial, agricultural, and strategic worlds, disrupting the Imperium's ability to wage war, feed its populations, and maintain its galactic war machine. Entire sectors would be plunged into chaos as supply lines break down and desperate battles for dwindling resources erupt. Unlike the unbreakable will of the Tyranid enemy, humans value their own lives, and desperate times are likely to see an explosion of heresy and insurrection. Some worlds and factions would undoubtedly seek to align themselves with the dark forces of chaos in a bid for survival, but these internal divisions would only further weaken the Imperium's ability to mount a unified defense. Not to mention, as with Octarius, this kind of broad tyrannic onslaught would attract those like the worshippers of Khorne, who seek blood and slaughter and chaos no matter who or what is involved. While the Tyranids often have variable success in assaulting Imperial worlds, if they can find a weakness to exploit to build momentum and an ever-increasing scale of Hive fleet tendril, they could become entirely unstoppable, unleashing horrific new bioweapons to counter anything the Imperium can throw against them, spreading contagions and mutating the populations of conquered worlds, turning them into twisted Tyranid-infested hives. Any defensive coordination would struggle additionally because of the Tyranid's shadow in the warp and the psychic onslaught of the Hive mind, further disrupting astropaths and psychers, limiting the Imperium's ability to coordinate defenses and direct its forces effectively. Given the history, it seems entirely inevitable that in a desperate bid to slow the Tyranid advance, the Imperium would fall back on a plan not dissimilar to Krypton's Gambit, whereby with few options left, they resort to scorched earth tactics, with entire systems and sectors sacrificed, subjected to exterminatus, and reduced to lifeless wastelands to deny the Tyranids the biomass they seek, a last-ditch attempt to evade complete galactic annihilation. One of the other major problems for the Imperium would be that as disruption, panic, urgency, and general disorder, not to mention the likely exploitation of the situation by disruptors such as the Orcs, all begin to take hold, the normal order of careful assessment and monitoring of general populations upon a world would begin to slip. With the Tyranids increasing their spread all across the galaxy, it's inevitable that more of their vanguard forces would infiltrate, and many, many worlds would begin to harbour those who are twisted by the genetic manipulations of the Tyranids. The more worlds that are turned this way may not immediately declare their alignment to the Tyranid menace, but they could refuse support of other worlds in a critical time, in a desperate system to the confusion of loyalists and the strategic advantage of the Hive fleets. As the unthinkable becomes reality and the Tyranids draw ever closer to Terra itself, it would likely become one of the greatest battles in human history. The scale of conflict that would be seen during a Tyranid assault upon the human solar system would likely make the heresy seem like a skirmish. The battle would very likely bring the majority of humanity's elite Astartes home. The Mechanicus, in a bid to save Mars, would deploy vast numbers of Titans, naval assets, and who knows what kind of other arcane technology they're holding from the Dark Ages. This would be the ultimate last stand, and nothing would be off the table. The Imperial Palace once again comes under siege, and the Emperor remains as always a last bastion of hope. With the Tyranid swarms numbering in the trillions, their vast fleets of bioships raining endless forms down upon the planets, they continue to press inexorably forward, unfazed, undaunted, unstoppable. Everything would be brought to bear in defence of the centre of Imperial power, the Space Marines, the Astra Militarum, and the remaining Imperial forces, who all wage a desperate last stand against the tide of Tyranids. But despite the immense courage, tenacity, and unbreakable defence on display by the Imperial forces, the sheer weight of numbers and by this stage, the absolutely perfectly refined adaptability of the Tyranids proves entirely overwhelming. The final act of this scenario, though, is an extremely unknown quantity. It's difficult to imagine a more cataclysmic act of final destruction than the Emperor's light being finally extinguished. I think we can only begin to estimate the forces that would be unleashed by, in a single instant, not only the Emperor being released, but also immediately the collapse of the Golden Throne. This is where people often wish to mention about that supposed dead man's switch of the Golden Throne, known as the Talisman of Seven Hammers. But this was constructed by Vulcan under the guidance of the Emperor, and its purpose, when activated, should the throne fail, would create a roaring inferno that would consume all of Terra, in the first instance denying Horus and the powers of Chaos the throne world. Except what people commonly seem to forget is that the phrasing of it as a dead man's switch is not really accurate, because that implies that just whenever the Emperor were to perish, it would automatically activate, as the phrasing suggests. But this is in fact not the case. In The End and the Death, it specifically states that only Vulcan can initiate this protocol, which is why he stood vigil over the throne during the Emperor's absence, which raises the very troubling prospect that if the Tyranids were able to consume and slaughter the Emperor, Vulcan, who is missing currently, would not be there to ensure that the Webway Gate did not instantly collapse and Terra becomes a complete maelstrom of chaos, as any remaining human forces, the Tyranids, and all the horrors of the warp combine in what could only be described as the ultimate apocalypse. Now, if you think I have the space and time in this video to speculate on the innumerable scenarios of what happens with the Emperor, you've got another thing coming. It's certainly one for another Emperor of Man video. The Imperium is an extremely complex patchwork of factions, and it's true they hold immense strength and a demonstrable ability to evade the very worst outcomes for humanity when facing some of the most nightmarish enemies in the galaxy. So there certainly could be situations where the Imperium forges alliances. The Eldar, certainly. They seem to do this ever more already. The Tau, perhaps. The Orcs, stranger things have happened. The Necron and Chaos, debatable, not impossible. So it's all very open-ended, plus with the rift empowering the Emperor, who knows what can happen. In this scenario, though, with the Tyranids ever increasing their power, taking more and more worlds of mankind, destabilizing the Imperium, and with every advance increasing their biomass, their fleets, their bioforms, and their adaptability, in such a scenario of exponential gains for the Tyranids, the Imperium of mankind falls. Terra is overrun, the Emperor's light is finally extinguished, and the Imperium crumbles. The Tyranids have devoured worlds beyond estimation, absorbed countless species, and have become now a completely unstoppable force that spreads unchecked throughout the galaxy. Now let's roll back to the current time again in M41 and consider another major problem for the Tyranids, the Orcs. While the Orcs do potentially face issues around adaptability, they also have demonstrated their ability to lock up the Tyranids for a significant period of time. In the example of Octarius, as both the Tyranids and Orcs are designed to wage extended wars of attrition to see who will emerge as the ultimate victor, which, by the way, I've already covered in a two-part video and is linked at the end of this as well as on screen right now. In the scenario of the Ascendant Tyranids, the Imperium now finds itself slap bang in the middle of a new era of galactic wars of attrition. The Orcs grow ever more powerful, fueled up on the prospect of fighting unending wars against alien horrors. While throughout the Imperium, planets fall to rebellion and heresy from increasing frequency, leading to bloody purges and the loss of valuable resources. Warp storms often herald ever-increasing incursions by Chaos, which creates the double problem of denying vital warp routes, which of course only then further isolates Imperial sectors. Xenos forces like the Drakari inevitably take advantage of these vulnerabilities, launching raids and incursions that further strain the Imperium's stretched resources. All of this increases the possibility for Orc invasions upon isolated human worlds, which in turn fuels the Orcs into an ever more regular state of war, unleashing huge campaigns throughout systems and sectors, clashing more and more with the Tyranids. Meanwhile, as ever more sectors of the galaxy are engulfed and their populations devoured, countless planets are reduced to barren husks, but the Hive Mind carries an insatiable hunger and its forces remain an unstoppable deluge. But one Imperium's disaster is another Orc's celebration. Plus, by Orc logic, you don't survive since the time of the War in Heaven if you can't handle a big zoggin' scrap now and then. Which of course is something I think we can all agree on. The Orcs' complete love of battle and mayhem means that as the Imperium falters, the Orcs begin to usurp some of their worlds and territory. Scattered Orc warbands and freebooter fleets grow in power. They unite under powerful warbosses and form ramshackle but powerful empires, seizing ever more planets abandoned by the Imperium, and as they grow in strength, this only gives them an increasing drive and ability to seize even more worlds, which drives their empires to become bigger and stronger, basically the Orc standard operating procedure. As the Imperium weakens and both the Tyranids and Orcs exploit this, they are charting a course for an almost unimaginable Xenos Armageddon. Orc mech boys tap into long-lost technology, repairing ancient war machines and even constructing their own crude spacecraft. The Orcs' characteristic Gestalt psychic field strengthens as their numbers swell, allowing them to manifest reality warping effects and constructs which defy all explanation. Their war bosses, hungry for bigger fights and greater challenges, declare massive wars that unite disparate Orc factions into colossal greenskin conglomerates. The Orcs are steadily becoming a mirror image of the Tyranid Hive fleets. This expansion, of course, will inevitably draw the attention of the Tyranids. The Hive Mind perceives the greenskins as a potent source of biomass and genetic diversity, but also recognizes the speed to which they are growing and the inherent risk in allowing them to expand so rapidly unchecked, and the complications this could cause for their continued campaign of planetary scouring. The conflict between Orcs and Tyranids becomes a galaxy-spanning war of completely unseen scale. Any smaller factions like the Votan and Tau are completely erased from history without much notice paid by anybody. The Imperium does what it can to consolidate its forces, but they lose billions of assets, and unknown numbers of worlds are torn asunder, often very nearly literally shattered, as titanic battles rage between the two forces. Orc war machines that have never been seen before, with illogical constructions and vast scale, clash with Tyranid Titan organisms, and the by now immense scale of psychic energies from the war clash in a world-ending eruption of psychic might with the Tyranid Hive Mind. Such a conflict would be, in the eyes of the Orcs, what they refer to as Ragnarok, the ultimate battle, which would allow them to display their value and ability before their own gods Gork and Mork, and which some Orcs believe, if the battle is big enough, could even see their gods making an appearance. The ultimate resolution for this scenario is one that remains uncertain. The Imperium and humanity would likely continue to exist in pockets of retreated sectors after there has been some opportunity to actually consolidate, and then for these to become extremely heavily defended. Likely this occurs after the Orcs and Tyranids become distracted enough by one another for the Imperium to then regroup. Smaller factions are just obliterated and consumed by the tsunami of alien horror. Ultimately, one would emerge victorious, but the conflict could last for millennia. In this time, it would be very much the last stand of humanity to make any kind of actionable plan, because unless they were able to find some way out of this scenario, it's almost certain that whichever emerged as the victor, be it the Orcs or the Tyranids, would then almost immediately turn their attention to the remaining Imperium and seek its complete annihilation, unless humanity could think of a clever strategy to avoid this. The only certainty, of course, is, as is always true, the galaxy of M41 would remain a cauldron of all-consuming and unending war. Now, I decided for fun, let's throw the Tau in here. Look, I don't really hate the Tau. It actually pains me to have to spell it out, but some people can never read between the lines, apparently. Plus, the idea of the Tau attempting to resist the Tyranids is quite comical, although notably, they have actually achieved this previously, albeit with a smaller Hive offshoot, and they still needed the Militarum to hold their hands. But now for centuries, the Tau Empire has steadily expanded across the eastern fringe of the galaxy, ever eager to spread the greater good philosophy and advance their technological prowess. The Tau Empire, of course, is characterized by its caste system, with each caste fulfilling a specific role in their society, the warrior fire caste to the diplomats of the water caste. And I'll be the first to admit that in the galaxy of the Imperium, orcs, Tyranid, and all other horrors have not been completely obliterated far earlier is absolutely admirable. But it's also true that they continue to hold a very small area of the galaxy, and if it weren't for the fact that the Imperium was quite preoccupied right now, they would very certainly be absolutely crushed. Now, just before you finish writing that very thirsty Tau defensive comment, fair's fair, alright, the Tau have been able to hold their own against the Orcs, to Chaos, and the Imperium, primarily due to their advanced technology, their coordinated battle suits and strategies, and their just general highly disciplined military. Even if we do ignore that part about most of them being very scared of close combat, but thank God for the Kroot, am I right, Tau enjoyers? But as the Tau discovered when first encountering the forces of Chaos, the Tau's expansion has brought them into direct contact with various, let's say, far less civilized factions than they might have otherwise hoped. And of course, this is largely due to the fact that the Imperium destroyed so many other civilizations during the Great Crusade. And in thinking about that, it's often a shame in many ways that the Tau did not originate in one of those territories that were near to, say, the Interrex or the Aurelians prior to the Great Crusade. Because if they had been, and also had they been at their current level of development, the thought of a Tau Empire combining with one or both of those civs, the galaxy could have looked very different. In my own speculative dreams, I love the thought of a recovering Dark Age of Technology human empire aligning with a forward-thinking, fast-advancing Tau Empire, who very quickly send the expeditionary fleets of the Emperor on their merry way, saying, "Thanks, but no thanks." Sadly, of course, that did not happen, and instead the Tau have discovered over time that if it isn't a dark armor-wearing human soldier from the warp with lightning bolts and little red wings that want to flay them alive, it was rampaging green-skinned hooligans or nightmare insectoid armies that spew acid bile and arrive in numbers beyond estimation. So not the most welcoming beginning for the Tau to the wider galaxy. But there is one benefit for the Tau, that due to their lack of psykers, the initial shadow in the warp likely would cause less disruption than among some like the human wilds of the Imperium. The populace would still undoubtedly be panicked at the prospect of such a hostile alien invasion, and as has been demonstrated before, the initial clashes between the Tau and the Tyranids are both extremely brutal and very humbling. The Tau's orbital defences and planetary fortifications, once considered impervious, are breached. Hive ships descend, unleashing monstrous creatures and swarms of voracious gaunts. The Tyranids' adaptation capabilities prove deadly as they evolve countermeasures to Tau weaponry. Firecast warriors, armed with advanced railguns and pulse weaponry, find themselves facing inestimable hordes of Tyranid bioforms. Using their carefully employed defensive strategies, their battle suits make an impressive display. But the sheer numbers of the Tyranids quickly threatens to overwhelm them. Of course, it's entirely probable that, as been seen before, the Tau may seek any kind of alliances they can in the face of a significant Tyranid threat. The Tau are not so proud as the Imperium to accept total annihilation before asking for help from Xenos. So as Tau diplomats of the Water Caste seek assistance from other galactic factions, they find themselves navigating the treacherous waters of interstellar diplomacy. But the Tau's entreaty for aid reaches the ears of Imperial commanders, who view the prospect of a Tyranid-infested eastern fringe with trepidation. Some make the case that the Tau being caught up with a Tyranid kills two Xenos with one stone, allowing them time to make significant defensive preparations while also seeing a long-term enemy extinguished. It's unknown if the Imperium would align with a Xenos faction so directly. Most often when alliances are made, they are under already existing situations. The alliance between the Cadian 18th and the Tau during the High Fleet Gorgon situation was a prime example. The neutrality that existed in that situation only occurred because they were forced to unite against the greater enemy, but a Tau civilization being assaulted by Tyranids and a call for help to the Imperium is an entirely different situation. However, one thing was notable in the situation of Gorgon, which is that the combined tactics and different weapons of the Tau and Astra Militarum proved confusing for the enemy, and prevented the rapid adaptation of bioforms that High Fleet Gorgon had displayed in previous encounters. As a result, during the final battle, the last of High Fleet Gorgon was slain by combined Imperial and Tau forces. The Tau also have demonstrated their starships more than capable of inflicting significant damage upon the Tyranid, to a point they actively fled during that campaign. So while it seems unlikely, it's not completely impossible to imagine a scenario where an Imperium with someone like Rabute Gilliman at the helm may look at the situation and decide the greater threat is best dealt with first by a combined operation. It wouldn't be palatable or preferable, but it's certainly plausible. And it would certainly be an alliance saturated with Imperial distrust, with those members of the Inquisition monitoring interactions closely, ready to eliminate any perceived heresy or rebellion. The Eldar would make a far more likely successful alliance for the Tau, with their ancient knowledge and psychic abilities, their far more open-minded thinking as well when it comes to working with others, and their ability to very easily see the Tyranids for the threat to all sentient life in the galaxy that they are. Which of course very much includes their own race, who are already barely hanging on. To see the Tau bolstered by craftworlds who would then deploy their formidable, albeit diminished in size, armies would give a considerable fighting chance. But of course there are those who always wonder about Eldar motivations, for they rarely aid others without it benefiting themselves. But then their impending annihilation by Tyranids seems quite a motivating factor. It's difficult to imagine the Tau successfully allying with Chaos, Orcs, or the Necron, the Votan and Jakari as well, for different reasons but basically because they're too far away. Any alliance though would be extremely fraught. Tau commanders would resent sharing their strategies and technology with their allies, no more so than Imperial commanders would be keeping one finger on the trigger at all times. In this situation, it's possible, just possible, that the Tau do manage to hold the line and halt the terrifying advance of the Tyranids. Any allied forces fighting alongside one another risk taking the odd opportunity to kill one another when they think nobody's watching, but the ultimate outcome could be very variable for the Tau. It could leave them only able to defend their core worlds and lose many more to the alien horrors. Worse still, any brokered alliances would be razor thin on trust. However you look at it though, a Tyranid assault upon the Tau in a concerted invasion is unlikely to be a good thing for their empire. In all likelihood, by the time they had considered and begun making any calls for assistance, they would be already heavily into defending their worlds, and with the sheer weight of numbers the Tyranids can deploy, they would sweep through the limited territory of the Tau like a plague of locusts. But there is the possibility that with a hard-fought, well-planned defense, the Tau worlds could be saved. It's been done before, but admittedly with far less than a usual High Fleet strength. If they were to survive, could it raise the possibility of the Imperium or the Eldar being granted access to Tau technology? Probably not if the Mechanicus have anything to say about it. But it raises some thoughts about what if there was some kind of emergency conference between the leaders of the Eldar, the Tau, and the Imperium, that they all recognize the existential threat that can no longer be ignored, and that for a time at least, must put aside their differences. Far-fetched? Maybe, but with the vast numbers of Tyranid High Fleet bearing down on you, how far would you stretch the rules to avoid the complete annihilation of your whole civilization? Now, I hope you can forgive me that the Eldar section here is fairly short, but it's because it ultimately runs along the same lines as the Tau. The Eldar are simply too small in number to stand alone against a concerted Tyranid High Fleet assault, although their experience and immense power in their technology does set them apart. Plus, they do retain the advantage of the Webway, which should never be underestimated, for it is an immensely powerful tool in escaping an enemy or deploying to assault one without warning. The Eldar craftworlds of the ancient Eldar race recognize the Tyranid menace as a threat not only to humanity, but to all sentient life, including their own dwindling civilization. Drawing upon their unparalleled knowledge of the warp and their formidable psychic abilities, they hatch a daring plan to aid the Imperium, something not out of the realm of possibility because it's almost happening right now in M41, as the Eldar already have been responsible for helping Gilliman in several ways, not least, resurrecting him. So we would see Eldar Farseers like Ulthuan reach out to the Imperium proposing an alliance against the Tyranid threat, initially met with typical suspicion. The dire situation forces the Imperium to entertain this unlikely partnership, while the Eldar bring their wisdom and knowledge of webway portals, plus their advanced experience in psychic manipulation that could prove invaluable against the Tyranids. Plus there is of course always the outside possibility of the Anari and them bringing forth their god of the dead, Inayad. Although how that would actually work in terms of fighting off something like the Tyranid is a bit of the unknown, because really Inayad is all about avenging the Eldar souls and destroying Slaanesh. However, if that were to happen, there is of course the possibility that the Eldar return to their state of being as they were in the most ancient times, which means they would become fundamentally immortal and retain this ability to be reborn again and again from the warp, which would enable theoretically the Eldar the ability to regrow their civilization and steadily become a very powerful faction once again. But as things stand, we could imagine an outside possibility that sees Eldar technology adapted and even integrated into Imperial war machines, giving them a potent edge, as some Eldar tech is truly terrifying in how advanced it is, although it's likely comparable to some human weapons of the Dark Age of technology. Again, I say this is a considerable stretch because, you know, Mechanicus. But rather than engaging with a defensive situation, it's more likely that the Eldar and humanity would take, in this case, a more proactive approach to launch coordinated offensives against the Tyranids. This takes advantage of the Eldar's use of the webway and some of their craft world's hit-and-run tactics. They combine this with the Imperium's overwhelming firepower and sheer numbers, plus, as has been seen before, the Tyranids often struggle to adapt strategically when facing two different races who are allied, giving the forces another edge. They carefully select using the powerful knowledge of their senior commands like the Lord Primarchs to engage in chosen battles on worlds that unfold a critical crucible of war in the struggle to halt the Tyranid advance. The Tyranids, though, remain ever adaptable, and they begin to evolve bioforms specifically designed to counter the Alliance's strategies. Deadly anti-psychic organisms emerge, threatening the unity of the Eldar's psychic offensive, and both sides are forced to adapt continuously, often paying a heavy price in blood and resources. Although I will note one thing, is it even possible for the Tyranids to create anti-psychic organisms? I suppose theoretically they may have to be something like lictors though, who can operate independently and don't require synapse coordination. This alliance between human and Eldari would be another uncertain situation. It certainly has some merit to its strengths, for as the Alliance's forces clash with the Tyranids, they can hold them in place, allowing time for further planning, bolstering of defensive lines, and counter-assaults. The Tyranids, though, are the zenith evolutionary form when it comes to attrition, and they could last for centuries engaged in combat. Not to mention they would unleash new tendrils constantly across all the galaxy in a campaign of war that could become almost unmanageable for a fairly tenuous alliance. But such a power share between the Imperium and Eldar would certainly stand as a testament to the desperation of the 41st millennium, where even the most ancient and enigmatic races must set aside their differences to face the ultimate horror of the Great Devourer. For were they to fail, the dire consequences for the rest of the galaxy would surely become inevitable. The Votann are a difficult faction to cover, because they are fairly new to us still. Their capability and means by which they could resist something like a Tyranid attack are very open-ended, but still, it felt worth covering them just because I know people will ask. And despite there being such a small faction in the grand scheme of things, similarly to the Tau and Eldar, if faced with annihilation, they would be unlikely to survive alone. But in at least having human heritage, there is a solid chance that they could align themselves closer than they would ordinarily in assisting the Imperium, which means maybe allowing them and the Mechanicus closer knowledge of their STC ancestor cores, because make no mistake, the prospect of an impending Tyranid assault would certainly be a terminal scenario for the Votann. It would definitely focus the mind, and they would have to use all their guile and stored knowledge to have any hope of surviving the situation. In the scenario of a direct confrontation with the Tyranid High Fleet, without external aid, this is a death sentence for the Votann. So very likely upon learning of the impending invasion, any initial strategy would focus on evasion and stealth. One strength the Votann have similarly to the Tau is in the power of their ships. Like many specific aspects of Votann technology, they have retained more of the Dark Age of technology quality than most Imperial tech, so it's likely their ships would be a force to contend with and could probably inflict significant damage to Tyranid fleets. The downside would be their lack of numerical superiority. Meaning though, Votann fleet commanders would most likely launch ambush-style assaults, hiding within asteroid fields, gas clouds and celestial debris, making it difficult for the Tyranids to detect and converge upon them. They also are known to have more powerful Geller fields and a means of charting through the warp more reliably than the Imperium, so it's possible they could continually use these hit-and-run tactics to great effect. In this way, they could optimize their surgical strikes to target vulnerable Tyranid bioships in an attempt to disrupt the Hive Fleet's cohesion, deployment, and feeding mechanisms. Early on, if the Votan were having to stand alone for some time, it may not be the best terminology, but I think you could call the scenario something akin to asymmetric warfare, where the Votan have advanced weaponry and the capability to adapt to deal with the specific threat at hand. They would still have to use diversionary tactics, hit-and-run assaults, traps, and targeting of key units to cause maximum disruption. The Tyranid, by contrast, favour an all-out game of numbers, deploying their fairly straightforward bioforms that rely on very often teeth and claws and little more. To further slow the Tyranids, they could misdirect them with older fleets of ships, luring them away from the core worlds, or using this so that they are able to strip planets of the maximum amount of resources possible before subjecting them to planetary scouring, similar to the Imperium's approach of scorch and burn by exterminatus. Eventually, it would become necessary throughout this delay period to build bridges and negotiate resource-sharing agreements or mutual defense pacts with most likely the Imperium, but these are the Votan, so they do not hold quite the same burning hatred of Xenos, although surely they're not fans either, so any other alliances would be made with caution. When all is said and done though, the chances of the Imperium or other allies sending significant resources to protect the Votan core worlds is, similarly to the Tau, unlikely. It's more likely that the Leagues of Votan would become refugees, not unlike the Mechanicus during the Heresy, and become either a fleet-based civilization or find an Imperial planet upon which they could establish a new home. But it is unlikely that a full defense of the Votan territory could be successful. But again, nothing's for sure in these scenarios. Often the Tyranids are turned away by ingenious solutions or circumstances that could not have been predicted. For example, in the defense of Macragge, what eventually turned the tide was the sacrifice of a massive battleship, turning its power systems critical and dragging most of the Tyranid Hive Fleet at the time screaming into warp destruction. Which always makes me think of Independence Day and the President saying, "Okay, now we know how to take them down." Well, if destroying a Tyranid Hive Fleet requires just flying some ships into them and making the drives go critical, start making those sacrifice ships. Such a strategy would surely be something that the Votan scientists and technomancers would be capable of achieving, while others develop new strategies, weapons and defensive measures to counter the Tyranids' ever-changing threats. While the Votan might not possess the military strength and scale of larger factions, their resourcefulness and willingness to employ unorthodox tactics could give them a fighting chance of endurance against the Great Devourer. Because when fighting such a relentless enemy, the survival of any faction hinges on their ability to think creatively and act decisively, as much as it does confronting the bleak reality of the terrifyingly insurmountable odds. And then we have the Necron. The Necron exist as a very specific problem for the Tyranids, similar to Chaos, who come straight after this. And I've often seen people wonder why the Tyranids would bother to engage these factions at all. And in truth, they may not always do so. In fact, they often very actively avoid both for obvious reasons. As to why they would, it's because the Tyranids view both Necrons and Chaos as more like competitors in the pool of consuming their food source. And so, in the big picture, it's just as well to engage and destroy them where it becomes necessary. But they will also avoid them where they can, because it's just expending resources and biomass for little, if any, gain. Unfortunately for the Tyranids, the Necron remain a considerable problem, because for one thing they feature an especially distinct lack of biomass, although admittedly there may be some minerals in there. But also their extreme technological power with weapons that are very efficient against biological forms. Gauss weapons are truly horrific when encountering biological matter as they break down the target into its component molecules layer by layer by layer. This creates a flaying effect, but occurring so fast it seems as if they just turn enemies into charcoal-like dust and can rip through and vaporize even the most heavily armored of units, be that gargantuan chitin-plated Tyranid killing machines or Astartes land raiders. The other thing the Necrons have going for them that is an unusual issue for the Tyranid is the Necrons' considerable scale of raw numbers. Of course, the Tyranid in the grand scheme of things likely have more bioforms that constitute the greater fleet, but then neither the Necron or the Tyranid are bringing their entire factional numbers to the table simultaneously, although if they did, imagine that. War in Heaven, Part 3. So while the Tyranids are known for their overwhelming numbers and rapid adaptability, frustratingly for them, this becomes somewhat of a moot point against the Necron forces. There is little they can adapt against when it comes to the Necron, for they are perhaps the most irresistible force in the galaxy. They're constructed to be highly resilient and utilise advanced technology like their phase-shifted shielding, and also just that small matter of being able to reanimate fallen warriors. The Tyranids' modus operandi is to use overwhelming attrition against an enemy, deluge them with numbers and crush all resistance as quickly as possible. They rely on their immense stores of biomass to score a rapid net positive when a world falls. But when facing the Necron, almost all of their strengths become weaknesses, for they can only recover little, if any, biomass if they were victorious. Plus, the Necron are designed as essentially the ultimate counter against a war of attrition. Then lastly, the Tyranid have no means by which to learn or adapt against the Necron beyond just basic experience. But there is, however, one major ace card the Tyranids have left to play: psychic power. While the Shadow in the Warp may not be as disruptive to Necron as it would be to others because, as an example, they do not rely on the Warp for travel, nor communication, nor do they likely call for reinforcements as the Imperium might, the Necron, and also Catan, do not enjoy psychic power. They do not enjoy it at all. And unfortunately for the Necron, the Tyranids have bioforms whose psychic power is absolutely off the scale. This really is the Achilles heel of the Necron as well. Psychic power has been the bane of their existence since the War in Heaven. So does this mean that the Necron will be just destroyed by any Tyranids who lean in on the psychic power? Well, most likely. But unfortunately for the Tyranids, this is still not the automatic win it might appear to be. Because if you're the Necron, you don't survive several million years in a galaxy full of psychic users as a race who are very allergic to psychic power, without thinking about how that's going to be a problem. So you probably know that the Necron have developed this use of Noctolith or Blackstone for the longest time to create these immense null fields, the Pariah Nexus, which are basically a huge anti-psyker field. Well, these fields are not only anti-psyker, they also are anti-hive mind synapse, which is a massive problem for the Tyranids, as it basically undermines not only their powerful psychic bioforms, but just their entire ability to fight at all. What's even worse for the Tyranids is that the Necron also have small versions of this known as a null field matrix. These are said to exist on every Necron tomb world, and they were originally implemented as a way to protect themselves against any pesky warp horrors during their vast sleep, Eldar psykers, or just really anything psyker, because when you're slumbering for millions of years, you want to make sure that you are safe. It conveniently turned out that these were also excellent at countering the Tyranids. So for this reason, the Tyranid tend to avoid Necron tomb worlds altogether, because they can feel the abrasive burn of nullification as they draw closer. Now, such a device would of course be amazing for the Imperium to create their own versions of. All it would take is some quick research and development by the Mechanicus. Oh, never mind. But actually, in seriousness, such devices would be very useful, but also incredibly problematic for the Imperium, in a whole spectrum of ways. For the Imperium, of course, leans very heavily on psychic ability for their communication, some defences, not to mention that when the fleet of Imperials entered the Necron's Pariah Nexus, within a week most of the ordinary, even just non-psyker humans were scratching their eyes out or going insane from being unable to sleep, because all humans retain a very minimal psychic ability, even if it's not clearly apparent or usable. So a null field will give them continual migraine, nightmares, insomnia, and in general just make them go slowly insane. Plus, can you imagine installing a giant null field on Terra? I can't imagine that that would go well. So any battles that do occur between Tyranids and Necrons can often be brutal and attrition-based. The outcome depends on various factors, including the scale of the engagement, the tactics employed, and the specific forces on each side. But they are by far and away one of the greatest threats to the Tyranids. And it raises the question, could the Necrons either indirectly or through some horrifying, let's say, arrangement, end up becoming the saviour of the Imperium? For the Tyranids though, the Necron really are a major problem. But it mostly depends on whether they can simply avoid the Necron and leave them well enough alone and just carry on chomping through the galaxy. Maybe this will be enough. Or if they have to devour every single planet in the galaxy, no one or no thing has ever outlined really what qualifies as mission complete for the Tyranids, so we're left to speculate about this. Could you call it a complete galactic domination, even if the Necrons were the only other faction left standing? Debatable, but I would say probably yes. And then lastly, we come to another perplexing problem for the Tyranids. Also lacking biomass, but with considerable strength as a faction. But this could diminish during an all-out Tyranid assault upon the galaxy, and Chaos could even expand its power to destroy a threat it sees to its existence. The gods could unite, they could even leverage the suffering of the mortal humans and their fear to drive themselves to an end goal. The Chaos gods do not desire the literal flesh and biological mass of humans as the Tyranids do, but they are empowered and fueled by the sentience of mortals, including their powerful emotions such as anger, despair, ambition, and anything related to hedonism. Plus, of course, feasting upon the souls of mortals when they eventually pass beyond. So one of the primary reasons for the Chaos Gods to oppose the Tyranids is their insatiable hunger for biomass, which of course includes the souls of sentient beings. Also, it is said, this issue is one that is very open to interpretation and ambiguous. It's actually a topic I want to weave into something else, but it is, suffice to say, quite a huge, rambling concept, and not one I really have time to insert here today. Effectively, it's dealing with the concept of souls in the 40k verse, what they are, how they relate to other forces in the galaxy, and how some are different to others. This even goes all the way back to really the beginning of the galaxy. Because from the human perspective, a soul is this intangible thing inside mortal beings, which, as far as most humans understand, dissipates into the warp upon death. Other souls, like the Eldar, appear more enduring. We know that, for example, Slaanesh gathers the Eldar and Drakkari souls to torment for eternity. So you might think, well then, does it really matter who consumes mortal races? If the Tyranids consume the biological mass of humans, surely their soul flows to the warp. Chaos wins almost by default in some respects. This is the point at issue. There is very little reference to what happens when Tyranids consume mortal beings, but it is at least a possibility that by some unknown means they do in fact absorb their souls. The short story Wraithflight is one of the few which reference staring into the hive mind of the Tyranids and seeing what lies within. And for the Eldar who sees this, what they learn is the prospect of their eternal soul being trapped within the hive mind, tormented for all time, themselves being reborn endlessly, which can be interpreted as being used for bioforms. Again, this goes off into another big topic I want to cover, but there is certainly something about the Tyranid hive mind and soul energy. Maybe this enables them to channel the immense power of the warp more effectively. Maybe they need soul energy to place within some of their more advanced bioforms. Who knows? It's a very speculative area, but interesting. Either way, Tyranid hive fleets are all-consuming. They devour entire worlds and leave behind nothing but barren soulless husks, which in the long-term picture denies the Chaos Gods a vital source of sustenance and steadily weakens their influence in the material realm. Another issue with the Tyranids' psychic hive mind is because of its extreme power, its very presence creates turbulence in the warp itself, making it difficult for the Chaos Gods to exert their influence in the Materium. The psychic shadow cast by the Tyranids does disrupt the emotional energies that the Chaos Gods feed upon, all of which is just deeply troubling. The Tyranids remain a very disturbingly unknown quantity in the long term, but in the short term they are an extremely significant threat to their power, for they thrive on mortal suffering and conflict, which in turn drives the eternal cycle of war, corruption, depravity and ambition. The Tyranids of course have none of this. All they are is a relentless drive for consumption, leaving nothing but entirely dead worlds in their wake. For every planet they destroy, they increasingly disrupt this cycle, depriving the Chaos Gods of their necessary carefully puppeted sustenance, which if left unchecked could potentially lead to a galaxy devoid of sentient life and warp gods left starving until they eventually fade out of existence, which for the gods is a truly terrifying prospect. Much like the Necron, the Tyranids and Chaos forces have contrasting advantages and disadvantages. Where the Tyranids are highly organized, Chaos forces can be chaotic and unpredictable. Where most battles sought by the Tyranid involve the acquisition of biomass, many Chaos forces offer little in this regard. Although, of course, you could have a bio-rich world which is controlled by Chaos, and they seek to retain and cultivate it in horrifying ways while keeping a human population effectively hostage. So there's that. But in the overall picture, the forces of Chaos deliver far less benefit to the Tyranids than most other mortal forms. It's also entirely debatable if the corruption of Chaos forms, the poisons and other bizarre psychically influenced horrors could cause some problems for the Tyranid were they to ingest them, even though the Tyranid of course extremely adapted to handling the very worst of such things. In terms of straight battles, Chaos forces can bring to the field considerable resistance to Tyranid attacks, not least because they themselves have little fear of horrific beings. Plus, Chaos Space Marines and Demons possess powerful psychic abilities or are imbued by the effects of the warp, which they use both offensively and defensively. For Chaos, this can be a significant factor in battles against the Tyranids, and of course not to mention the existing Demon Primarchs. Battles between Tyranids and Chaos are some of the most unpredictable, as both can vary wildly depending on the specific composition of the Chaos Force, demonic entities and tactics employed. Some Chaos Forces may struggle against the sheer biological might of the Tyranids, while others may find unique ways to counter them. What ultimately will be a major deciding factor in the effectiveness of Chaos is the unity once again. We know that the Chaos Gods are absolutely able to put aside their endless great game when the threat is great enough. They did this during the Heresy, and it's difficult to see how there is a more existential threat to them right now than the Tyranids. So I think it's very plausible to consider a scenario where Chaos becomes united or undivided for a period and goes for a full-out war against the Tyranids. This, combined with let's be generous and say the Imperium standing alone and then other Xenos banding together, it could actually be enough to turn things or stem the unstoppable tide of the Tyranid horror. Not forgetting, of course, the Necron in the mix as well. This would be an extremely complex scenario, though, and it's difficult enough to imagine any faction making alliances, but there is a pattern of civs in the 40k verse aligning toward a common enemy. So far, the Tyranids do tend to affect territories of individual factions, but as things become progressively worse, this could change, and you could see a more united effort. But the questions that remain are, what would that mean for the Tyranids, and would it be enough? But more importantly, what happens if that scenario does not take place? Well, I would never say it is a certainty, but it definitely makes the likelihood of a complete Tyranid extermination of the galaxy considerably more plausible. To see the entire galaxy completely overrun by the Tyranids would be a nightmarish vision of biological annihilation, where the relentless hunger of the Hive Fleets have devoured all life and matter in its path. But is it possible? As I said at the beginning, I think this depends somewhat on how we want to consider what we mean when we say true galactic domination. If this means one rising to a level of control over all others, yes, it's absolutely possible. If it means the extermination of all other civilizations and powers, this one may be not so much for the Tyranids. Are they capable of annihilating all mortal organic life in the galaxy, though? I think yes, absolutely. There are a variety of caveats with this, though. As I noted, what happens if you destroy the Emperor? No one knows. That could be something we've never seen before. Does it result in his reincarnation in the warp? Does he arrive like Vulcan in some distant place and become a new reborn leader of humanity? Terra falls, but humanity survives? How does that situation look? Then there's Chaos and the Necron. They're probably the biggest factors in whether the Tyranid could achieve complete galactic supremacy or not. The Necron would likely not want to see this happen, not out of any interest in other factions, but purely from the perspective that they see the galaxy as rightfully theirs, and they would use the full extent of their powers to prevent others from destroying what they consider is theirs to destroy. Chaos, bizarrely, would probably try to stop the Tyranids out of their own need for long-term self-preservation. So it's a complicated picture. It's hard to know if this would cause genuine alliances or more likely just separate factions working toward common goals and trying to not get overly in the way of one another. There's also the outside possibility of truly heretical alliances being made. Imagine if the Necrons or Chaos came and said, "Look, we'll help you out, humanity, but also here's the bill in human lives that we will require for this service." That would be a very uncomfortable situation. I think one of the main questions is, how would the steady extermination of the galaxy take place? If the Tyranids continue on their approach of using specific tendrils of Hive Fleets, this is obviously more manageable. It's still an insane force to contend with that is barely able to be contained, but it's a lot better than the entire Tyranid species converging in a mass swarm of slaughter. If, however, after some time, they begin to converge in the scenario I described earlier, where they become this convergent one entity, combining all they've learned on this course to eventually remove all weaknesses and retain only their strengths, this could result in an extremely unpleasant scenario, and they could theoretically become near impossible to defeat. The only way for the mortal races of the galaxy to survive is to prevent this vast convergent evolutionary event and destroy at least some of the main Tyranid fleets before they can be reborn as the ultimate galactic devourer. The prospect of such an event could certainly prompt some alliances to be made, but honestly, it's all very open speculation. Let us presume, though, that the Tyranids do end up able to consume most of the galaxy, and that, as I said, despite the efforts of Chaos and the Necron, the Tyranids are ultimately unstoppable and just grind their way through to the heart of the galaxy. The light of humanity and other sentient mortal races has been extinguished, and now there is only darkness. There are no communication signals, no starships travelling through the warp. Planets are still and empty. Psychic echoes of countless souls consumed by the hive mind linger like distant whispers in the void, but the civilizations and cultures of mortal races are silenced. Previously lush planets teeming with life are reduced to barren husks, continents are stripped of their forests, oceans drained and valuable minerals stripped from the earth. This is where any reasonable estimations end, and only pure speculation begins. Because no one really has any idea what would occur if the galaxy were lost to the Tyranids. What happens when they have nothing left to feed upon? So my descriptions from here on is really pure imagination and entirely my own speculation. And there are several situations though that come to mind. The first question is, do the Tyranids actually push for a point of complete consumption, total extermination of all living worlds? Currently, they have only been making the initial inroads, so we don't know what their end goals would look like. So far, it's been presumed they're on this mission to just scour all planets. In that scenario, I think that undoubtedly for a time, the Tyranids roam through the galaxy in vast hive swarms looking for any remaining biomatter. When they find none or they discover the opposite, like any remaining Necron, they turn away. After some time, the hive mind decides it's time to move on, and we'll discuss what happens there last. In another scenario, the Tyranids do not just scour the entire galaxy, but as they progress and periodically find systems that suit their needs, they transform the entire world into bizarre biomatter farms, which are truly the stuff of nightmares. Hive cities becoming vast living organisms with one purpose to just produce biomatter. All the energy from stars nearby is steadily converted into organic form, and these worlds operate as basically refueling stations for the vast hive fleets, which continue to pour in from the galaxy's edge. Again, just to say, this is my pure speculation imaginings, not anything that is stated in the lore. But I imagine this could be a situation that occurs, because if the Tyranids scour through a galaxy devouring all, but then find out, damn, actually there wasn't as much as we thought, and there isn't enough to sustain the vast hive mind, well then what? So I consider this idea of them creating immense farm systems to fuel them somewhat plausible. As they continue to establish these positions, the hive fleets roam unopposed, their tendrils extending into every corner of the galaxy. Enormous bioconstructs akin to twisted cathedrals of flesh and bone drift through space, serving as centres for Tyranid control. And these leviathans constantly are birthing new monstrosities, the most potent of which are the Hive Tyrants, Swarm Lords, Norn Queens, all of these being avatars of the Hive Mind's will. By now the galaxy is a nightmarish realm of grotesque bio-creatures, where every form of life has been twisted, consumed and merged into the ever-evolving Tyranid swarms. Vast tendrils of living tissue connect entire worlds, serving as biomatter highways for the hive fleets. Cities of once great civilizations exist now only as pulsating, cancerous nodes of Tyranid reproduction. And this is all necessary for them because the next stage is in moving on outside the galaxy to find the next source to sustain them. And this is why I consider they must need these biofarm systems, because it could be a considerable amount of time before they begin to move on. Plus, they have to cross the galactic void. And it makes me consider, do they do this in the same manner as a line of logistics? Do they stretch from one galaxy to the next for as long as possible to ensure that they can maintain that supply of biomass? Obviously, if you know anything about distance, the distance between galaxies is absolutely vast, even for the Tyranid scale. It's considerably more than, say, the diameter of a galaxy. So that approach seems a little implausible. I still think though that they could adopt this strategy of farming organic life before they eventually move on. Or who knows, maybe we have it all wrong. Maybe they will never move on. Maybe this galaxy is the one they've been looking for. And they will eventually, once they hold domination, continue to just farm the galaxy for all time. Instead of fully devouring a planet, they partially consume it, leave it to regenerate before returning to consume more. So they steadily move around and around the galaxy. But with this idea, I actually think it doesn't make a ton of sense, because the Tyranids' entire modus operandi is the consumption of all. I think it's far more likely that the Tyranids adopt the approach where they go into some form of hibernation. They get fueled up for the winter, as it were, on the massive amount of biomass that they've acquired. They shut down all non-essential bioforms, consuming them into the greater pool of hive biomass, and this is what will sustain them for the long journey. The only other question that remains is, how do they just press out into the void from here? Are they on a gamble with the next galaxy they encounter, or do they stay in the galaxy until they can determine by some long distance means the best galaxy to head towards? Can they do this by just some psychic sense? Do they fire off vanguard organisms to test the nearby galaxies like probes? Such a journey would take an inestimable amount of time. Tyranids do not travel through the warp either as such. They use specialized bioforms that create an immense gravity well, and then they simply drop through this, thereby achieving FTL travel. So in the end of a galaxy scenario, do they create some specialized ship that functions in creating an immense gravity well, so vast that the entire Tyranid hive mind fleet can travel the distance to the border of a new galaxy? Do they need to perhaps exit the galaxy they're in first to achieve this, like some kind of specialized Mandeville point? There are many questions when it comes to an endgame scenario of galactic domination for the Tyranids. For Chaos, it was all about maintaining their power, which means maintaining some semblance of existence for those unlucky enough to have survived, and a galaxy of maybe not unending war, although that's a large part of it, but also just unending human suffering. For the Tyranids, there is no goal of territory, no desire to control power. They only seek complete consumption, and to scour all planets in the galaxy of biomass. The concept itself is so alien that this is perhaps why it's inevitable that guessing what happens next is so very difficult to predict. All that is known for sure is that the Tyranids represent perhaps the greatest threat to all in the known galaxy. They are the relentless, all-consuming enemy. They never tire or cease and will stop at nothing other than the complete extermination of all life in the galaxy. They represent the very real possibility for the complete end of all human civilization and all sentient civilizations in the galaxy of M41. Thanks again for watching. If you did, please remember to drop a like on this video and subscribe to the channel. I'll be back again soon with more, so be sure to tell me which faction you would like considered next. And as always, all the links are below, including the channel sponsors Siege Studios and my Patreon. I'll see you as always in the next one.
Even transport could last. One could feel the stench of death in the air. You could taste it. I saw some people fall. They were crushed. I feel like I was going to suffocate. We couldn't breathe. We couldn't move. I clung tight to my mother's hand, and I could see her eyes that had always been so calm were wide in fear. Her hands would not stop shaking, no matter how hard we held each other. We had nearly made it to the last transport. Suddenly a screaming wild group came out of nowhere. They were almost climbing over the mass of people. We couldn't fight them. They overpowered us, and before anyone knew it, the transport doors were closed. I saw it lift off with people hanging from the outside of the ship. Mother covered my eyes, but I could still hear the bodies hit the floor. We couldn't wait for another ship that might never come. We were overcome with desperation. But then by chance, we heard another group talking about an abandoned cargo vessel. We knew it was wrong, but if you had only heard them, no one was thinking clearly. We were acting on instinct. I don't know tech stuff. There was a group who seemed to know how. We only knew it was our last hope for escape. As we lifted off, we saw them reach the spaceport. Just terrifying forms, like an armored insect. They swarmed the landing pads like a wave, throwing out jets of what looked like plasma. There were still thousands of people down there. Thousands. They tore through them. It was horrific. Those in our group who seemed to know how to pilot the ship said we had to make a short warp jump. But with no navigator, they said we may have had a better chance left to the monsters. It was a blur, like a nightmare. Time was moving fast and slow at the same time. I remember seeing my mother's face for the last time, and then it all went black. She was gone when I woke up. I don't know how, or why, or where. I don't know what happened to her. Some of the others were dead. Some were out of their minds. But we had somehow survived. Days turned to weeks. We had little food and water left. Quarrels were becoming physical. It was just desperation. Frustration. A miracle. His blessings were upon us. A signal from a nearby planet. They set us on course for the source. We were all praying that it would lead us to a safe refuge. We will soon descend towards our destination, but now many of the survivors are saying we will face inquisitors or will be detained for quarantine and physical inspections. I know it is said that the human spirit is resilient, and in the face of horrors, we cling to hope. Hope of a new beginning by His grace and will. I pray for my mother. Love the Emperor, for he is the salvation of mankind. Heed his wisdom, for he will protect you from evil. Whisper his prayers with devotion, for they will save your soul. Honor his servants, for they speak in his voice. Tremble before his majesty, for we will all walk in his immortal shadow.